I'm Al. If you don't know me, I have the privilege of being a leader here at the Shore Community Church. If you do know me, yeah, it's me speaking, I'm sorry. So today, I'm going to be sharing with you about how we see things. For this next bit, I'm trying to not look at anybody in particular, because it can be really like, so I'm going to sort of look at the sky. What are you looking at? Has anyone said that to anyone? Anyone had that? What are you looking at? Well, that phrase has literally lost me a tooth. When, as a teenager, I had not had the blessing of James's teaching on taming of the tongue, my response to what you were looking at was, oh, a bully who's angry all the time. Whack. He hit me in the mouth, which actually, as I was kind of going on the ground, because I did dramatically fall on the ground, as I was going on the ground, I thought to myself, why did you hit me in the mouth when it was the eye you had a problem with? I would have pointed that out had my mouth not been full of tooth. So, did I learn a lesson from this? Well, not immediately, because actually I have to confess that subsequently I have been hit a couple more times. Not in the last 30 years, but always for not actually being able to keep my mouth shut. I have never hit back. Now, is there anything for us to learn? Yes. Read the book of James, specifically James 3. But much more on the message this morning. This is an introduction to eyes, really. And I'm focusing on how I and we look at others, how I or we look at ourselves, and how God looks at us. Now, our eyes. So let's start with our eyes. And from what I know about eyes, they are ridiculous. This takes a picture, this takes a picture, they merge together and give you a picture. That's staggering. And so when we, slight sidetrack, but when anybody says, anyone comes up with this random theory about how we can randomly be made, and everything about our body, but particularly our eyes, come on. So it's little wonder that the Bible pays particular attention to our eyes. Interesting that a key aspect of how we talk about our walk has an eye reference. Give me vision. The Bible is a sea of seas. I like that. Everywhere Jesus goes, he sees. And people see him. The eye is the window to the soul, sort of. But actually, our perception of what we see and how we filter it is, in my view, the window to the soul. So if you like, I think the eye is a doorway. Things come into our eyes, and it's what we perceive or imagine that counts. So we've got these pictures that are coming in. They come into our brain. And miraculously, and it's the message that the brain sends back that I'm interested in. So we're going to have an example. Here we have something that we're going to look at, and then we're all going to get a brain message, and I'll be interested to know what. So our brain message might be, shark, swim away. Or as others, although I think Graham, those who like deep sea diving are really into it. I think Graham once said, oh, I really like sharks. Yeah, I'd swim towards them. So we do have different perceptions of this car. This car, I think, is a, my boy will tell me exactly what this car is, but I think it's a Bugatti. This car, what does it say to us? Buy me. You will make me be important. Different emotions are created. Ah. Squirrels cuddling, I want one, two. Oh. We all have different reactions. How do I look at others? For me, this can be split. Those who I love and I am close to. Those who I don't know that well and those who I don't know at all. So all of these groups, and I think I've, you know, there's no science here. I think we've all got groups like that in our lives. So all of these groups of people, all of these groups of people are equal in God's eyes. But they are not necessarily equal in my eyes. And this is an issue. Those who are in my crowd, in my in crowd, are welcomed in. My family, close friends could do no wrong. They are my tribe. We have similar ethics, lifestyles, life experiences. They are easy to love and comfortable to be around. The judgment in my mind for these people is soft and considerate. It's easy to see my tribe as I imagine God does. In his gospel, Luke reports Jesus sharing, "If you love those who love you, what credit is that to you? Even sinners who love those who love them. Even sinners love those who love them. And if you do good to those who are good to you, what credit is that to you? Even sinners do that." So Jesus challenges us by how we look at others. And when we look at others outside our tribe, what do we see? What are we looking for? What are we looking at? What are you seeking to decide what your view is of someone? Do you even have the right to have a view? Now, this isn't meant in any way to shame us. I am interested to know, as I fall down occasionally here, I'm just interested to know, I fall down here, what we can look at a car someone drives, the job that they have, all the filters that the world, and I feel like saying the word, spitting the word world, but the world tells us to look out for. Are they a threat to us, or our well-being, or our prosperity? Is their world saying they've done better than us? Are we reading they're better than us? Or could they comfortably fit into our tribe because they're very much like us? Whose glasses are we wearing when we are looking at others? Now, I know Jess shared on this last year. Are we looking at the, or partly, so are we looking at the world's glasses? Now, the world's glasses would definitely be manufactured by a designer brand, no doubt. So we're going to call them CK. So the world's glasses are CK glasses. There they are. That's what the world says. For the glasses, for the way we look, is all about material items, or certainly the Western world. God's glasses are manufactured by compassion and love, CL. So not CK, but CL, compassion and love. So that's the frame with which how we're seeing others and how we're seeing others. Now this next video clip, if you're of a certain generation, tech willing, just is another way of looking at how we look at others. Now this made a real big impact on me as a teenager. There's no HD telly back then. and particularly, I was warned about skinheads.
An event seen from one point of view gives one impression. Seen from another point of view, it gives quite a different impression.
Oh, is it not coming up?
But it's only when you get the whole picture you can fully understand what's going on.
That's such a shame. So we've got the words, you can imagine.
An event seen from one point of view gives one impression. Seen from another point of view, it gives quite a different impression.
We're going to move on. That's a shame. Great video. You can imagine. Some of you might remember it, but it did make an impact on me. Effectively, the skinhead looks like he's running towards a guy to steal his bag, and he's actually pushing him out of the way because some rubble falls down. That's what happens. So our eyes cannot and should not interpret what is in someone else's soul. That's illogical. Yet, we do it all the time. Let's open the Bible. Let's look at the story of Zacchaeus. Now, the words are up there, so there we go. It's all here. This just ticks every box. So if, as takeaway points, James 3, but actually that's a side point, read this, read it and read it. It's all here. It's incredible. Jesus entered Jericho and was passing through. A man was there by the name of Zacchaeus. He was a chief tax collector and was wealthy. At this point, if we were a pantomime, we'd all boo and hiss because Zacchaeus would have been widely hated. People would have seen Zacchaeus and attached all manner of things, and he would have been hated. Zacchaeus' life is just about to be changed. He wanted to see who Jesus was. Boom. But because he was short, he could not see over the crowd. So he ran ahead and climbed a sycamore fig tree to see him, since Jesus was coming that way. When Jesus reached that point, he looked up and said to him, "Zacchaeus, come down immediately. I must stay at your house today." So he came down at once and welcomed him gladly. All the people saw this. Picture, brain, what's going on? And began to mutter, "He has gone to be the guest of a sinner." But Zacchaeus stood up and said to the Lord. Interestingly here, Zacchaeus is addressing the Lord. He is not addressing the thoughts of the mutterers. "Look, Lord, here and now I give half my possessions to the poor. And if I have cheated anybody out of anything, I will pay back four times the amount." Jesus said to him, "Today salvation has come to this house, because this man too is a son of Abraham. For the Son of Man came to seek and to save the lost." What a great story. And it's a story that is a record of something that actually happened. It's not a parable, and we've got great learning in parables. This happened. This is a historical account. Now, I was really challenged when on holiday last month. Abby and I were having dinner in our local in our hotel, and a group of English holidaymakers came into the restaurant. The shirt I was wearing was linen. The shirt our new guests were wearing were football. Within 5 seconds, I decided that my dinner was going to be ruined. And within 10, I had made all manner of assumptions about their lives. How dare I? Why did I think that I had the right to do all of this? But I did, and I was wrong. My immediate plan for how my evening was going to go had been changed, and in my mind, I cursed others for not being like me. Jesus, in his Sermon on the Mount, gives clear advice on so much, but also he deals with the eyes. This is a little... "Why do you look at the speck of sawdust in your brother's eye and pay no attention to the plank in your own? How can you say to your brother, 'Let me take that speck out of your eye,' when all the time there is a plank in your own eye? You hypocrite. Jesus, he had a sense of farce way before Shakespeare. And I interpret Jesus saying that we cannot clearly see without sorting out our own stuff, and that we should do that first. But I actually also think that something will happen to us in the removal of our plank that will make our brother's speck disappear or seem much less important to us. Now, jumping back to Luke, we're going to continue that narrative with Luke telling us, come on, it's easy to love each other. He goes straight into, but love your enemies. Now, we know all these. Do good to them and lend to them without expecting to get anything back. Jesus' words, love your enemies, do good to them. This must start by looking at everybody with compassion and love. Slight sidetrack, but I know that by doing this, we change how others react to us. As good as we think we are at pretending, it is pretty obvious when you are being spoken to by someone who isn't or has formed a view of you, has given judgment upon you. And in response, we can play up to that role. I've just finished a book. No, I haven't. I've just finished the first three chapters of a book called Humankind, and then the last chapters, it sort of rolls away. But it's the first three chapters are ridiculously good. And it suggests that we are all inherently good and kind. And our instincts are generally positive. One of the many examples it provides quotes a study with a social psychology professor who has been asking the same question for years. And we're going to do this. We're going to do this just A, to prove that everyone's still awake after 10 minutes, and B, just as this experiment. So this is the experiment that he's been carrying out. Imagine an airplane makes an emergency landing and breaks into three parts. As the cabin fills with smoke, everyone inside realizes we've got to get out of here. What happens? So, on planet A, the passengers turn to their neighbors to ask if they're okay. Those needing assistance are helped out of the plane first. People are willing to give their lives even for perfect strangers. Planet B. Everyone's left to fend for themselves. Panic breaks out. There's lots of pushing and shoving. Children, the elderly, and people with disabilities get trampled underfoot. So I'm going to ask a show of hands, not what planet you feel you, not how you would react, but the planet that you think that you inhabit. Are you planet A? Do you think we inhabit a world where everybody would look after each other? Or do we inhabit a world where everyone puts everybody down? So are we planet, those for planet A, hands up, show of hands. And for planet B? So that's sort of a majority, thank you. We buck the trend slightly, because 97% of people think that we live on planet B. It does not matter who you ask, left wing or right, rich or poor, well educated or not. The truth is that, well, everybody makes the same error. The truth is that we live on planet A. Panic God made. There are countless examples, from the Titanic to the plane that came down on the Hudson River. Don't know if anyone's seen that film. Countless examples to the horror of the World Trade Center in New York on the 11th of September 2001. This is a contemporary account of a firefighter. As the twin towers burned, thousands of people descended the stairs calmly. Even though they knew their lives were in danger, they stepped aside for firefighters and the injured. Going back, and people would actually say, "No, no, you first." I couldn't believe it that at this point, people would actually say, "No, no, please take my place." It was uncanny. Whatever we may feel, or dare I say it, religion can say about us, we are good. We do all have God in us. But when we see ourselves and others as not accepted or acceptable, these are lies, then we can react in a way that God doesn't intend. God must be in all of us, and it's up to us if we decide to see him or look for him in others and in ourselves. Our eyes cannot and should not interpret what someone else is seeing. That's illogical, yet we do it all the time. Depending on how we feel about ourselves and view ourselves, and so many past experiences that I can't unpack for now, that's not for now, depends very much on how we see others. That's unreliable. Going back to my holiday. On an excursion, Abby and I took a bus to the port city of Mahon, where actually we had gin with Julie. That's another story. On our way to Mahon, in a seat in front of us, was a lady who, across her back, had a tattoo that said, "Bitch." It was all the way across her back. And for good measure, it had some devil paraphernalia. It was very similar to this image, which you might not be able to see, but it was, anyway, but it was. Oh, the bitch tattoo lady. I try to pray for you every day. Looking at ourselves, how can we get to a place where we can put that curse on ourselves? When this is what we see of ourselves, when this is how we label ourselves. So we can rest easily, it's all right. We haven't got that tattoo on our back, it's not a problem. But I'm afraid that we can't. Because when we look in the mirror ourselves, or when we judge ourselves, we're in a similar way looking at ourselves on occasions like the world does, and not through compassion and love. And when we see ourselves as unworthy, we curse ourselves. This can be low-level curses. "My hair looks a mess." That's what I say whenever my hair looks a mess. It's the exact tone. To a high-level hardcore curse. "I'm useless." How we may look is something massive about how we understand ourselves. And many of us bring ourselves down because of how we look. Make ourselves feel low. Everywhere we look, there are images to tell us how we should look, what we should wear. And it's garbage. These are lies, and not for you. Our king, our example, the most important human that ever walked this earth. What did he look like? How tall was he? What did he wear? What colour hair did he have? How much hair did he have? Apart from a little bit in Revelation that talks about white wool hair and golden sash, we know very little. The Bible is silent about what Jesus, our King, looked like. Now we can get clues from the times of what others may have looked like or dressed like, but we don't know. Why is this? Because it's not important. It didn't and it does not matter. So if it was not important for the writer of the Gospels to describe Jesus' physical appearance, why is it so important, certainly to most of the Western world, what individuals look like? It's nonsense. We have fallen into the worldly trap, easily done, but a lie that brings us away from God. It was likely that Jesus would have looked quite similar to his disciples because he had to be pointed out when he was betrayed. That's kind of a thought. But whose eyes are we looking at ourselves with? These material eyes, when we've established it's nonsense, or with a frame of compassion and love? How we see ourselves without God's goggles very much affects how we see others, and this is not, in my view, God's plan. In fact, it could be argued that it's against his plan. The thread that's running through this is very much, then, looking at ourselves and others in a way that God sees us. When he looks, what does he see? Now, this is a moment where I hope this will be heard. We're all in a dressing room. We're half-time, and this is the big kind of... this is the G-up, and this is truth. I'm certain that he does not see a clothing brand or a size of house or a brand of car or tattoo curses or even how we see ourselves. After all, we are unreliable witnesses. He sees a champion. He sees himself in us. He sees beauty. Isaiah shared, "Since you are precious and honored in my sight, and because I love you." And we talk about love, you know. Oh gosh, there's so many moments when we can think about, if we're blessed with children, that incredible, unbelievable, undiluted love that we have for them. Times that by 10 for what God thinks about us. Zephaniah, this is to a tribe, but I think this stands for us. The Lord your God is with you, the mighty warrior who saves. He will take great delight in you. In his love, he will no longer rebuke you, but will rejoice over you with singing. Fearfully and wonderfully made. We've heard that, but do we believe it? Do we believe it when we look in the mirror? Wonderfully made. Looking at Luke's gospel, good old Luke, thank you, Luke. And as we kind of go into land here, just a final thought on how God sees us. That the amazing story of the parable of the son who goes away and stuffs up and comes back. Now, I really think that's us. And how God reacts when he turns, how his father reacts, and I think is how God reacts, when we turn up at the door and knock every time. We don't have to stuff up, we just turn up. Luke reports, bring the best robe. This is God saying this about us. We're knocking on the door. Bring the best robe and put it on him, and put a ring on his hands and and shoes on his feet, and bring the fattened calf and kill it, and let us eat and celebrate. These are words over us. No matter what, we are accepted. And God delights in us all. His eyes are full of compassion and love. And this is our example. His door is open. Every human being, everyone here, everyone we know is a unique and wonderful soul that God delights in and rejoices over with singing. Every human being is worthy. That includes all of you. Believe it. You are worthy. See yourself as such. Now, I'm going to close in prayer, but before I do, I'd just love it if we could just spend 30 seconds in silent reflection on what God, on how God sees you. Just ask God silently, how, God, how do you see me? Let me see you as you see me. God, how do you see me? So we're just going to spend 30 seconds reflecting in our own lives on how God sees you. And then I will close in prayer. Amen. And Lord, thank you that we can see or visualize in our minds all of your wonderful, perfect creation. Lord, forgive us for how we can see others. Lord, forgive us for how we can see ourselves. Lord, protect us in what we see. Make us wise in what we choose to watch. May the scales fall from our eyes. Help us to see ourselves and others as you do, through your eternal eyes of compassion and love. In your name.